This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Hello, everyone. It is time for another serving of Earl Grey, Trek FM's one and only dedicated Next Generation podcast show. I am your host this week, sitting in the center chair, Daniel Prue, and joined with me, as always, are my two favorite hosts. We have the scant-wearing engineer, Darren Moser. Now, Darren, I have heard through the grapevine that you have really nice legs, and I know this is the 24th century, but tell me, is it really the most appropriate attire for engineering to be wearing a very short dress?
Well, let me just say, like that gentleman in this episode, he actually wasn't running because of the saucer separation. He was running because he realized he woke up that morning going, "Dear Lord, I'm wearing a scant. I'm going to go put some pants on right now." And boy, he booked it to the nearest replicator, replicated himself a good pair of trousers, and has been a happy man ever since.
That's good, because my concern was, as you know, on TNG, in the engineering section, the floor on the second level is made of glass. So, like, if I were just to go hum-de-dum-dum working on the dilithium chamber and I were to look up and somebody were to be wearing scants, it might make me quite uncomfortable, is all I want to say.
Let's just say I always make sure people go in front of me up the Jeffries tubes.
Excellent, excellent. And also joining us this week, as always, we have Grappler Gilfus. Now, Philip, I know that you're really big into politics, and I have to know, what does one need to do in order to obtain the office of Grappler?
Quiet! Quiet! You said you wouldn't be any trouble! Oh, hi there, Daniel. You know, from being a Grappler, it's... For one thing, you really have to do your hair in the morning to look like you're in charge. You know, you just don't wake up like this. It's just really hard. Daniel, did you want something to eat? I have some fruits here. Anything here?
I actually would like some pizza. That would be great.
I'm sorry. I don't. Oh, look, there's a large pepperoni. I didn't see it there before.
Wait a minute. I definitely would have noticed a large pepperoni pizza sitting right here on the desk.
But the appearance of it didn't make it any less delicious.
All right. Well, as our listeners, you know, I don't even know. Did they even guess at this point what we're trying, the jokes that we're trying to make? We're doing an encounter at our point this episode, listeners. You know, I had realized that we are now at this is going to be our 25th episode, guys. So we are almost as many weeks old as Star Trek The Next Generation is years old. And I was like, we have never done an episode on the beginning of TNG. So I thought, hey, this would be a great time to talk about it because it's pretty important, obviously, to the rest of the show. And so I want to get some of your first impressions. Like, I don't know if you guys are going to, I don't remember personally, and I know I'm the youngest, but I don't even know if you guys are going to remember like the first time you guys watched Encounter at Farpoint. But even now, like when you think of Encounter at Farpoint, is it negative, positive, neutral? What do you think, Darren?
I think it, like most series, it definitely shows its newness in a lot of the verbiage, personally, every time a character says Old Bandy City, it's like grating chalk on a chalkboard, and I cringe a little bit because people don't talk like that. People would say the Old Bandy City the first time, but not every other sequential time ever.
Oh, you mean
OBT?
Just
say the city.
That's a great place.
Yeah, they'd you know, abbreviate it like the OC, the OBT, and
nobody calls it that.
Yeah, it's the OBC, you know, just head on down, you know, for all your shopping needs, bolts of cloth, and
apples.
Apples. They have the Apple Store right over there. It's great. But anyway, I think besides that, though, it's a fun episode. And I try to always watch it through the lens of this was the first Trek to come back on the screen, you know, after Kirk's Trek went off the air. So there was a lot of hype and people were really excited. I mean, there was hype even without the internet. I mean, people were going crazy for this show. And in that regard, I feel, you know, while it's a little rusty in a couple of places, overall, it's a great start to the Next Generation. And I mean, if you think about it, it's a good chunk of the series because it's a double length episode. So it obviously secured enough for at least a second season, to which I'm grateful because that led to a third, fourth, and so on. It led to a Pulaski season, and then redacted that.
And Philip, what are your initial impressions of Encounter?
I definitely don't have any hate or anything for Encounter at Q Point. You know, it's as Darren has stated, I think probably the things that people might have issues with are probably were at the time considered homages to the TOS, like the extreme close-ups of Picard. All right, we're guilty provisionally, like, you know, I can see his nose hair, but that's sort of like the whole like TOS kind of, you know, let's put Vaseline over the camera lens close-up moments, which looks silly now, but they were like, well, you know, that's how we the way you do Trek, right? How other way to do it other with loud music and close-ups and scants. You know, that's how you do it. But I think that the pilot definitely did its job of saying, hey, here's what's new. I'm sure we're going to get into, but hey, here's a Klingon, here's an android, here's families. We're different.
And our ship is freaking huge. So take that, Enterprise A.
It's interesting, though, because I think among Trek fans, at least in my experience, among you know, the people I've talked to and the people I've listened to, Farpoint is received, you know, to the lowest degree of all of the Star Trek pilots. I mean, you know, even depending on which pilot, quote unquote, you consider for TOS, like whether, you know, it's The Cage or Where No Man Has Gone Before. Like, I still think, you know, or Emissary or Caretaker or Broken Bow, which is my personal favorite. But I think that even among all of those episodes, Farpoint is the least regarded. And I actually think that that's kind of rightfully so. I think it's probably the weakest episode of all of those episodes. It's kind of mismatched and awkward and strange. And I feel like it misses the mark more than it hits the mark on all of its characters and plots and beats. But like where would you...
I would just say in defense of Encounter at Farpoint, it had to plow a lot of ground that the other pilots didn't. I mean, take Emissary. I mean, you basically had the Best of Both Worlds two-parter to help set up that pilot. And then Caretaker, it's basically just the ship they're explaining. I mean, you don't need to establish the Maquis because that's been established in, you know, Next Gen. And then, I mean, Broken Bow, by that point, it's Star Trek and so much has already been established. So I think I agree with you in some areas it is a weaker overall pilot, but those other ones stood on the shoulders of what had already come out, whereas this had to reignite that fire for Star Trek.
Well, like when you say, like, I mean, I think it's a good pilot. Like what does a pilot have to do? Like, I think it does its job. Now, whether you're saying, is it a good episode? Is it like in all of season one? Yeah, well, it's no Justice, obviously. But I mean, you know.
But there's a judge in it, and Justice. It has more Justice in it than Justice does.
Yes, but this was the courtroom that killed all the lawyers. So, you know. But I mean, like, as a pilot, I mean, I think, you know, it not like said, well, this is, I know everything I need to know about all the characters, but it gave you everything you needed to know. You know, Picard's, you know, very different from Kirk, and you have this, right, you know, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but I think, you know, it basically introduced everyone. I think it did what a pilot had to do. like, you know, should it have been an hour versus 2 hours? You know, I don't know, but hey, we got Q, we got a storyline, you know, I don't know, what more do you want? We separated the ship. I mean, come on now.
Okay, I'm going to address this right now, since Philip mentioned it. A lot of people like to pokingly make fun of Star Trek the Motion Picture as Star Trek the Motionless Picture. And I think that's completely legitimate. And I want to say that the two scenes where we separate and then reintegrate the ship together are mind-numbingly long and, like, absurdly. Like, it's like...
Hey guys, oh, my goodness, like our theme? Like, want to hear it again?
Did we mention the ship can separate? Because we want you to remember that, like, extremely.
It's a dramatic separation.
You know
separation.
What would have sped up the separation and redocking? I think you know. A joystick. That would have sped up that whole thing.
Maybe again, like, I'm actually a little hesitant to say this after the past 2 weeks of me showing my own Trek ignorance, and I'm trying to recover from that. But let me ask you guys this question point blank. How is it possible that the ship traveling at maximum warp can separate, and then the saucer section can go faster than the star drive section that has the warp nacelles on it? It bothers me so much. It makes me infuriated. Should this saucer section not immediately drop out of warp?
Daniel,
I just don't
Daniel, understand access your theoretical.
Absolutely. No margin for error, Philip.
I do agree with you. I think it should drop out of warp, but its momentum should keep it traveling at least away. I think it was more like, we're not going to take the time to slow down, stop, detach, and then by that time, you know, it's going to be on us. So, but I do agree with you.
Oh, no.
This isn't
they loaded all the kids in front of the saucer.
No. Hang on. I have to interrupt you here. I have to interrupt you at this moment, Darren, only because not only do they have time to turn around, they also have time to come to a complete stop and then just sit there. And then you start to see the torpedoes explode. And then Picard's like, and now we wait. And so for some reason, Q is supposed to be right on their tail. Why he's chasing them, I don't know.
Maddox.
But there's obviously a very big gap between those two events happening.
No, that's true. There is. And obviously it's for dramatic effect of, yes, you know, let's shuffle people around and show all those families we care about so much yet.
Well, what happened is
shove
Q,
them on the saucer.
Q is pretty much like my iPhone right now. He's downloading a quick update because, you know, he has to change costume. He's like, oh, wait, I'm not Columbus. Okay. Update. I'm now a, you know, 1950s captain. Oh, still not good. I have to update again. And so, you know, it takes a while to get to...
Version 4.
Exactly.
Okay, here we go. Although I was thinking about, you know, the Columbus and the World War II getup today. And if you think about it, though, the difference in time between us today and viewing a captain from Christopher Columbus's time is about the same as the distance of Picard in the 24th century viewing someone in a 1950s getup. So I don't know if that was intentional, but it actually kind of gives us a big feel, because I think often, you know, Star Trek characters know an awful lot about the mid 20th century. And it's like, really, that's like us knowing a lot about Christopher Columbus and those ships, like an obscene amount of knowledge.
Well, you know, I of course is always the season one defender. I'm not going to pick on everything, but that scene does have a line that just doesn't work ever when you watch it, with Picard going,
"Thou goest."
No, Picard's like, "We don't wear those ridiculous costumes anymore." I'm like, really, Mr. Spandex? Really?
No, I think, to be fair, I actually think that's kind of the point. Like, I think what they're doing there is they're drawing attention, because, you know, when people watch Star Trek, if you're not a Star Trek fan and you like turn on Star Trek, you see these people in these brightly colored uniforms and it seems ridiculous to you. And I think the point of that line, I actually thought about this when he said it, is like, anything viewed out of context is going to be ridiculous. So like any fashion statement, any like kind of uniform kind of looks ridiculous, like to Picard, the army uniform that they wear in World War II, and kind of in a lot of ways unchanged today, looks ridiculous. It looks as ridiculous to him as, like, Darren was just mentioning, you know, those early Explorer uniforms. It looks just as ridiculous. And future, you know, 500 year in the future, military uniforms are going to look so ridiculous to us too. Like, I don't see that as a weakness of the episode. I actually see that kind of as a strength.
It'll be so camouflaged. All you'll see is their eyes. Just all these eyes floating around. Everything else is just so completely, it'll, you know, like, meshed with the background.
It'll be like Geordi in Identity Crisis. That's what we'll all look like.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which actually looks like the what do they call it? The putties in Power Rangers?
Oh, he does. He very much looks like the putties.
Yeah.
All you gotta do is hit him right in the chest and he'll just explode.
It's exploring time.
Don't do that.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about this, but I'm sure a lot of our viewers are familiar, but if not, I'll just inform them. Listeners are familiar, but Encounter at Farpoint started out as just that, Encounter at Farpoint. It was just that episode. It was everything that happened on Farpoint, and that was it. Then they told Gene Roddenberry, hey, we're going to give you 2 hours. So he made the Q part and kind of smashed it in there. And you can kind of tell, I think. I think it's pretty obvious that this was never intended to be a 2-hour thing. It's very.
I mean,
padded.
It's no The Gambit. Let's just say. I mean, if we're talking about great 2-hour episodes,
I'm seeing what you're doing there, Darren, and I'm going to let it slide. But
my goal is to just try to get Philip in stitches at least once a podcast.
Really, so. You didn't go with the Mark Twain episode? That really was.
I'm so glad he didn't. That's the only reason he's still on the podcast at this point. it's very clear that these two things are very separated from each other. But and of course we have this episode to thank for Q, but how do you guys feel about it? Does it mash well at all for you guys? Can you see the clear distinction between these storylines?
Well, I think it's interesting think about the I don't know, for lack of a better word, the director's cut. Like, you know, because I've seen, I think a lot of times I've just seen the two parts, and rarely, I mean, more recently, have I seen like that what you would have actually seen. Because, like, for instance, there's that scene near the end that they cut out of sick bay. You know, it's like, oh no, you know, we're on the verge of solving this. And Picard's like, I'm going to go down to sick bay for a second. Be right back. Be right back, guys. Be right back. And he goes down to sick bay and talks
to
Bev.
He sets his away icon to the little yellow dot. And so everyone knows he can't be, you know, talked to right now.
There are the alien ship is literally shooting at and killing colonists on the planet. And he's like,
I haven't had my talk-to-talk with Beverly yet.
You know, this might be my only shot. So I better repair this relationship real fast.
Play it cool,
and
Jean-Luc.
And, you know, fast
play
forward cool. to Naked Now, and, you know, we're just...
The one other thing, really quick, I don't want to steal your time talking, but the one other thing that, like, matches up with that perfectly is the first time, apparently, that Captain Jean-Luc Picard, Captain Picard, who has been captain for almost, what, 20 years at this point, it must have been the first time he's ever heard Red Alert. Shut that damn noise off! Yellow I alert, can't actually, stand!
You're going to be hearing that a lot. A lot.
And it's like, are you kidding? Like, why can you, like, why is Red Alert, like, stressing you out so much? This is a pretty important part of the show.
And not only does he turn off the alarm, he goes to Yellow Alert. So basically, you know, the gunners are getting ready. Everyone's getting ready for a fight. And then they're just like, oh, sorry, Fred. The light turned yellow. Okay, I'm going to go sit back down now. No, this isn't a Yellow Alert situation. Just turn off the alarm.
And I did like how you had a more chatty bridge, you know, Picard just shooting the breeze with everyone. Hey, what do you think about what we're doing? Hey, that's cool, isn't it? Weirdo, huh? Hey,
well, you know, Worf and future transporter chief Miles O'Brien got there first, so they got
you mean
to
Khan?
Yes, the Khan. So they got to sit together. So they obviously turned their chairs towards each other so they could pass notes and chat. That's why
they're like, man,
their angles.
We love being red shirts. We can never foresee us ever changing out of red shirts.
And Geordi's like, amen.
wait,
there's
is this
so
an official
much to
report
talk
Geordi?
About in this episode? hang on. We're cutting away. Hang on. There is literally every single sentence you guys say, like, brings up 10 more things I want to bring up. Can we also talk about how the original design of the Galaxy class has the con and ops officer essentially sleeping on the bridge? They're at like a 180 degree angle, and they're just kind of like, eh, whatever, you know, like, what is this? What is the point of this? I don't understand.
To be fair, they are like right up on that view screen, and it is giant, so they probably can't even see anything. But, you know, I think, is it because their chairs are tilted a bit? Does the Enterprise kind of drift to the left? Because they're not actually facing straight. So do they, like, is it hard to steer? Like, it's like driving a car, you know, as if you're, you know, hinged off a cup holder.
But, you know, most people don't know. Think about, like, you know, all the stuff we see in Star Trek that we have in technology nowadays. This pilot actually is how we get our gamer chairs today. You really can't tell there's actually speakers in their headrests.
It's so true.
So they really get the full experience there with the view screen.
I just feel bad if that had remained the chair style, you know, when the Enterprise eventually crashed, because they would have gone right through that view screen. I mean, they were in luge position.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if that guy was frozen or if he was just sleeping. It was really, it was hard to tell.
Oh, you mean B'Elanna Torres' older brother?
Wait.
Apparently?
You just need to let that go.
Are you
Philip.
Saying they're all related,
just let
Daniel?
It go.
No, oh, no. I mean, sorry. no, sorry.
About Lieutenant Yar.
What I would say, okay.
Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say, you know, to your question about the two episodes split together, and yes, it does, you know, at times feel like it, but gosh, I can't give it any bad marks, because I can't imagine Star Trek without Q this early on. Like, I mean, I think Q brings more of the "this is Star Trek" feel than the A plot being, you know, the mystery of Farpoint Station. You know, that just feels like an episode. That feels like, you know, the first non-pilot, you know, of TOS. It's just, oh, hey, you just happened to catch us, you know, was it mezzanine? I'm butchering the French, but it's like, you know, middle of the action. Like, oh, yeah, we've been, you know, putzing around on the Enterprise. This was like, okay, this is the beginning, and we get to catch all that, and we get to meet, meet Q. He really admires the Tholians. That's why he loves, like, weaving interstellar space. but he can't get the geodesic shapes down. He can just do the wall. It's just, he tries to start to curve it, and it falls apart. It doesn't work. But I enjoy it as a 2-hour episode.
Give Q credit, though. His wall scales very well, because he can like put it all the way around a starship or just in front of a turbolift door. So it scales very well. So
that's true. It's like the Transformers. He can scale it as big as a skyscraper or as small as a handgun.
He has more than exactly. Meets the eye. But again, like, Q really is that I mean, you've said this, but like the bridge to TOS, because TOS always had those big, you know, godlike aliens almost like every fifth episode. And so, like, all the stuff we kind of see is just all this, like, again, how else? And I know we've said this before on this show and in other shows. You know, how else would you do Trek? You know, other than TOS? I mean, and this is really the new, you know, exploration of, like, well, this is how you do it. But then maybe let's tinker with some things. See if they like it. Huh? You like it? Is it all right? Huh? Don't hate us.
Yeah, and you know, you're right, and I do try to. The more we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh, I can kind of give it a pass, because, and I actually did write it down before we started the podcast. Here is the fact that you're right; it is the first Star Trek on television in 20 years, right? Essentially, and it literally establishes all of Star Trek that we know beyond the original.
I mean, holodeck, come on now. And how many episodes would that be used in all of Trek afterwards?
I was going to say, if you're complaining about the long, you know, longevity of the docking scene, I mean, they walk out of the holodeck. I mean, they could just call for an arch and just be out, but they have
hike
you don't
all understand.
The way back.
The rear wall, it's about 2 meters this way.
Okay.
So
oh, that's
I'll just,
true.
Yeah, yeah. The only time we ever see the limits of the holodeck.
Well, no, we see limits other places, like
us.
In some of the Moriarty ones when the grid's failing or he's taking over at UC.
Right,
the,
right. But what I mean, like actually interacting with it, like, you know what I'm saying? Like he throws an object instead of it presumably the holodeck would work like if you threw a rock, it would just then project that it was going further and further away.
Right.
But this is the time he actually throws a rock at the wall and hits the wall and it's like...
It'd be hard to get bored on this ship.
There's a zero gravity gymnasium. I'm like, why don't we get to see this? Yeah. I've never seen this before. Like, it's, well, okay.
And there's are a few little technologies that I do wish had made it past the pilot. I mean, like they use the as the, when like Riker uses the computer console on the wall and it's got the little blip lights, you know, showing him where to go, and you know, it's a fun little thing. But
you mean moron Will Riker?
Yes. How do I find someone on the ship? Let's talk about this scene.
You've never actually been on one of these ships, have
you? We don't have these on the hood.
We could have. Oh boy, we could have an entire episode on this small scene because Riker, Mr. I'm up and coming, you know, I am the Commander Shelby of 5 years ago, you know, like he is the man right now. Oh, by the way, where is this really important room I should know where I'm supposed to go?
If you
want to
check out my butt when I walk away, even better.
Oh my, yeah. She checks him out so badly. And like the camera lingers on her face as she's like looking at him and it's like, all right.
See, she really could have told the computer where Holodeck 4 was, which would have gone the other way, but she wouldn't have been able to get such a great view. So she said, he's in Holodeck 3J, which we never hear the J ever
I'll
again,
be in Holodeck 4. You
know. Plus Barclay was in Barclay was in 4 at the time, so it's fine. Headcanon. Okay. All right, guys. Look, we've been just dawdling at this point. Let's get back on track here. So one other thing I really wanted to talk about, or one of the things I wanted to talk about, is obviously we get introduced to all of the characters in this first episode, and I think they're a little bit more miss than hit. And I think it's excusable because it's the first episode, and like you said, we're establishing a whole new Trek here, but... what do you guys think about the characters? Like, did any of them stand out to you as being particularly strange, especially compared to where they end up? Or do you think they did a fairly good job at grounding them and establishing where they are and where they could go?
Daniel, I don't know what you're talking about. None of these characters developed at all in The Next Generation. And the characters we see
we don't develop characters
are the
TNG.
Same characters we see in All Good Things. So I don't know what you're talking about, Daniel.
Well, I'll start with Worf.
Pain?
I feel that, okay, if you've been, you know, watching TNG or your TOS, and it's like, okay, the Klingons are like the main antagonist, right? As soon as we see a Klingon on the bridge of the Enterprise, we should have been like, OMG, what the heck is this? Like, you have to explain this right now. And it's just... He might as well be another crewman just walking around. I mean, I think I really wish that they had done more of that. I mean, more of explaining him instead of his one, like, I'm a Klingon. I have to go into battle. Like,
you're Starfleet officer.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to blast a hole in this view for this viewer. I'm not thinking, but so I would have liked to see a little more of Worf. He kind of is definitely a secondary character. And maybe that's more hindsight because he just becomes such a prevalent character in the series and even into continuing series, but you wouldn't think that with
this
pilot.
Did we hear from Worf again?
It's called the Orb.
Did he have any of his own stories that developed his own character throughout the next 7 years? I don't remember.
No, he gets plenty of stories. Actually, you know, it's interesting that you brought up Worf specifically, Darren, because I actually thought that as far as characterization goes... They nailed Worf right away. Like, in Encounter at Farpoint, like, when he's like, no, a personal request, Captain, to clean up the garbage on the bridge, or whatever he says. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, that's
kind of... bridge. Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's kind of Worf. Like, to a T, almost. And
at the con, he's really smart. Like, he's really quick, and he's giving the information really quick. And, I mean, he knows more about this Galaxy-class starship than Riker, obviously. So,
was it Q and Worf hate at first sight?
We do know that it was Q and Riker love at first sight.
Honest for you yet.
What about you, Philip? How do you think they got the characters starting off?
And this is
going to
sound like a silly thing, but it's what I think. And so there you go. I really... can't believe they changed. I'm being serious here. I know people aren't going to think I am. I can't believe they changed Troy's uniform. Like, I would have
It was a really good uniform.
I mean, yeah, the scan, I mean, legs, okay, whatever, she has good legs, and maybe you would, you know, some people would be like, well, let's put her in pants, but regardless, she was in a uniform, and to go from that to the black cat suit, I don't know what you would call it, in the next episode, yeah, and
like
then for the
gray,
next
purple one, and,
4 years, yeah. I'm like, you know, I don't, I really like the way she looked, I mean, not just in, I like the way she looked, but I mean, I like the way she looked professionally in Encounter, and that's kind of, you know, doesn't really make sense that they changed that. But I think, you know, for the most part, because you do, and I've been making fun of it, obviously, you do see all the characters grow, and so it's hard to go through all of them. But I think, you know, one character that for me, when you're rewatching it, that does take a while to get used to, like a year, because you see how he not just changes as a character, but changes how the actor portrays him, is Data. I remember once seeing an interview with Brent Spiner, who said, and I'm probably going to get this the wrong way, that when he went to audition, I'm probably getting it, either A, he thought he was supposed to be more human and they wanted more robot, or he thought he was a robot and they wanted him to be more human. And I can't remember which one. And so he's like, well, I'm not ready to do that, you know, because I came in thinking one, you're saying the other. But he's definitely more human the first season, and then he kind of becomes a little more robot.
He's makeup test Data. Yeah. Because they're not quite done.
Yeah, he's very expression. He has a lot of expression that first season. That like he tones it down to just like the ticks and every now and then. So I mean, I think to me that's kind of like you see the most kind of, oh, you know, we're figuring this guy out. But I mean, I think everything else, you know, kind of introduces, you know, I mean, Geordi, you know, Geordi and Worf were small parts. They weren't who we saw later. You know, so there really wasn't that much to show.
Geordi looks at a lot of stuff, for sure. In the first episode, in Encounter 4.0, Geordi likes to look at things and see them. So yeah, that's part of his character, I guess.
Is that an official report about Geordi, Daniel?
well, you know what? It was so funny because I was watching the episode and I'm like, and I see Riker say this to Geordi. And I'm like, wow, that is so unlike Riker. Riker's kind of like the jovial, I'll take things kind of a little bit lighter.
He's being kind of a jerk right now.
But then I was like, you know what? He did the same thing to Anson Roe. You know what I mean? Like the first time he sees her, he's the kind of like a jerk. Like, I'm surprised he doesn't say to Geordi, I'm sorry, that visor isn't regulation. Take it off. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no, look, you guys both had great points. And I actually have to agree with you, Philip. This is the only episode that we see Deanna with official rank, yep. Pips, right? Until like season 6 or something crazy like that, right? Like, you know, yeah, you're right. It was really interesting because I watched this episode and then immediately watched a season 7 episode. And I actually kind of suggest that people do that. I did, and that was really cool. It's a really unique perspective, and I actually suggest you guys to try it.
Episodes
that.
Don't matter, Philip.
Like, watch like a season 1 and then a season 7 episode. It doesn't even matter. The episodes don't matter.
Justice would probably be the good one to watch, I think.
It will blow your mind how different those characters are and where they've gone.
Well, I think one thing that, and again, because I can't remember what season I started watching TNG live, fourth season, off the top of my head, it may have been third actually, but like Picard in an Encounter, because you know knowing what Picard is becomes,
he's standoffish.
But, like, he does come like very not attractive. Like, you know, he's very like I don't know the word I'm looking for, like. Brusque, abrasive, you know. Now, there are some nodded winks that you see, and he does have some soft moments where he's like, you know, oh, Will, you and your apples. It's always apples with you, isn't it? You know, but, but you know, he is where he's kind of, but you see where he's like testing Riker, and you see kind of, this is definitely not Kirk, you know, this is, and he's kind of like shouting the half the episode at Q, and at his crew. You know, it's sort of an interesting view of Picard, and I know some would say he was maybe like that for a couple more seasons. But you know, it's very interesting.
Well, I like the scene with, you know, Picard and Riker where they're in the observation lounge. No, wait, was that the ready room? No, that was the observation lounge. And, you know, he's kind of giving him his real introduction, like his real handshake, and that's where, like you said, Philip, where it's got the softer side and you know, welcome to the Enterprise. And although I love the obvious shot, okay, when Wesley's on the bridge and he's like try it out, and the camera's like Wesley's POV, and it's so obvious. It's like you are supposed to feel like you are on the bridge walking towards the captain's chair. I mean, and it, I mean, you even see Picard like gesturing with his hand, like "Have a seat," you know, like Virtual Simulator 9087, you know. And
that's it. Man, if we ever have an interactive tour CD, there, this is going to be good
great.
Footage.
But no, I think.
Oh, no one ever tries to make this bridge from this.
It would have been interesting if they had maybe put the actors through like a boot camp of some sort. I mean, I know they're still formulating the show and a lot of things, but I think it would have helped to have like 2 weeks of trying to be in character and just give them a lot of the scope and the techno babble. And just, I think that would have helped them, especially in a sci-fi show. That's very important to like immerse yourself, because it's so foreign to just, oh, I'm going to play a character who's a cop at a bar, you know, like that. It's different when you're, you know, piloting a start.
You're off the case, McCluskey.
Okay. We're going to have an Encounter at Farpoint part two, because you mentioned like a dozen things that I want to touch on. And
such
I'm only going to
touch
on one of them right
Daniel.
Now.
That's
there are
you're
so
being
many
dilatory.
Can we talk about whatever obnoxious Wesley comes up in the turbo lift with his mother. Let's get the timeline correct here. Wesley remembers Picard bringing his father's body to him when he was younger, and yet Picard doesn't know Wesley's name. When Crusher is like, "This is my son, Wesley. You knew his father," and then Picard's like, "Oh, yeah, that's
grow up
right.
So fast,
now
Daniel.
I know who it
you
was.
Don't know what they look like."
Well, wait, but Wesley said he's the one who brought my father home. He doesn't say I remember him bringing my father home.
Then maybe that's just in my
maybe
head.
That's your headcanon.
So I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what he says.
He has to have been born at that point, right? Or even
Daniel, I know you're kind of an ass with children, so let me explain it to you. they grow up, and they don't look the same as when they're younger, as when they get older. I'll explain it to you later.
Look, I don't care if, you know, if my best friend, you know, his wife got pregnant, I would know the name of the child at any point at that child's life. It wouldn't be like a huge surprise to me who this person
was.
Well,
you mean... He also didn't seem to realize that Beverly was A, on the ship... until she showed up in the turbo lift, and then B, that she was connected with the boy that just happened to be standing
the
in the
boy.
Turbo lift. His first reaction is like the turbo lift opens and she's kind of standing to the side, and so all you see is Wesley, and yeah, he's like, this child is gonna get on my bridge, he's gonna, you know, mess up the carpet and the Roombas are gonna have to clean for like an hour. So
Data, you mean, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah exactly.
A race of slaves, Darren, is that what you're saying?
Just as lesser beings, you know, that don't have higher capacity, you know, memory inputs. But anyway, but no, and then he realizes, oh, you know, yeah, she. I think she kind of set him up.
That's funny. He kind of looks like me when I was little. Oh, I should go talk to her later when there's a better moment.
At a critical
right in the middle of a
moment,
red alert.
Yeah, in the middle of a battle. That's
and by the way, right in the middle of the battle.
Busy. No one will be looking up from their stations.
Right in the middle of the battle. So, do you want to transfer off the ship, Doc?
I requested this. Oh, I just put my foot in my mouth a second time in the same.
Shut off
day.
That damn noise! Are you sure, sir? There are civilians dying on the planet. Yes, I have important business in the medical bay.
My blood pressure goes up whenever there's a red alert, so from now on, nothing above a yellow alert.
Tea to call me.
Starfleet doesn't really work like that. Can we have like a orange alert? It's a little more important than a yellow alert, but not with
And
the
also
sign.
In the director's cut, there's actually in the beginning log there where, you know, Captain Picard's like, you know, we have some vacancies, including a first officer. And actually, most people don't know, if you get the director's cut, it says, and also, I'm informed a young Guppy will be joining my ready room.
I hope he shows great promise that he will grow one day into a spectacular lionfish.
That's right. Livingston is in the first episode. And they get, honestly, of all the characters on the show, they get his characterization perfectly.
I mean, he doesn't. Is, you're talking about not changing over 7 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Livingston has that down pat.
Consistent Section 31 agent all the way across the board. You know who they don't get right? Clearly, like I said, like we mentioned before, Khan!
Yeah.
When they throw Chief O'Brien into the Khan position.
Unnamed crew Khan position.
So let's get this straight here. He has now been a tactical officer, an engineer, a transporter chief. Am I missing anything?
He got to be on the battle bridge.
He was on the battle bridge. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So is this the only time that we ever see the emergency turbo lift on the bridge used?
Well, they
ever
probably,
in the whole series?
They do use it when Data's taken over the ship. In Brothers, I think.
Do they? I thought they went to the back one, but you could be right.
No, they use all the turbo lifts. So because Data's like sucking the oxygen out of the room, so everyone just stands up and goes to the nearest turbo lift.
To whistle?
And then Data like and then he takes the
you humans do this so easily.
Breathe. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I think they use it once or twice after that, but not very often.
We have not talked about one character.
Who?
Exactly.
Wait. Hang on, let me... We talked about Picard a little bit. Riker, right. Geordi, Data, Worf.
Yeah.
Troy.
Right. O'Brien.
Khan O'Brien. Yep. Hang on.
Torres.
We even mentioned Barkley.
The frozen people.
Q. Torres, the frozen
that
people.
That little midget with the gong.
Wesley.
Wesley we brought up. Crusher. No, I think...
The Bandy City and all of its inhabitants.
Standing in front of Worf.
I'm sorry. In front of Worf.
He was still in the Klingon section.
I don't think
Worf
ever met Groppler Zorn.
Before
we
integrated
about,
the bridge.
Oh, my goodness. The Hood.
Oh,
the USS
Hood. That's right.
Captain
yes,
DeSoto.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but this was... that's true. They had the great send-off by the great DeForest Kelly. We can't believe we almost forgot about that.
That's what it is.
That's it.
There was another frozen person.
How do you guys feel about that?
There was another popsicle.
Are you sure there was two? I thought there was just one.
I saw two
Captain America?
Popsicles.
Captain America is not in this film, or this episode, Philip.
Is it a Yarsicle?
Believe me, I watched it. What?
That's right. Natasha Yar. What was that? Was as many people may not be aware, was the fifth Beatle of The Next Generation.
She can't stand for this. I'm security chief, and I don't. Yeah, no.
A security chief with a short temper, that'll never work in Next Generation.
She's almost as obnoxious as another character in the first episode of another Star Trek series that only yells when they're in the show.
She does not kick any equipment. Okay.
I thought you were talking about the doctor that dies in Caretaker, because was he annoying.
I don't even remember anything about that guy.
How'd you like to be that? Like, we want you to be the doctor on the next Star Trek. Actually, you're going to die in the pilot. I'm sorry. It's been written into your contract.
And literally never come
and
back.
Literally never be seen again. But let's put ourselves out of our misery. But no, Tasha Yar is introduced. And I mean, yes, it's
butt.
Easy for us to judge her, though. Yeah, but it's easy to judge her because we know that she's not going to stick around, and she kind of left the family early on, so we kind of ostracize her character.
Thanks, Tasha. Yeah.
Commander Sayla?
I mean, she does come back in the most awesome way through time travel and Romulans, but I don't know.
Isn't all good things? I saw her there, too. And is that kind of the coolest thing about Encounter at Farpoint, that we get to see the prequel to Encounter at Farpoint and All Good Things? We get to see...
It's not even parts of it are a prequel, but it's more like a supplementary.
Well, you get to see Tasha
All Good Things,
with
right.
Picard in the shuttle, introducing him to the D for the first time. You get to see
right.
Picard meeting Data for the first time. You get to see O'Brien and Red wandering around looking for some sort of chief engineer who... Or one of them, one of the 12 that's been assigned to the Enterprise D. So,
doesn't he say, Geordi, like, why don't you take care of that? And he's like, I'm at the con. And he's like, well, I'm pretty confident you can take care of that. Just trust me.
No, I like, and again, I know we're talking encounter, but this counts as encounter because it's canon. In All Good Things, where Mr. Data, we're having problems with this, whatever it is, warp coil. They just goes over and like flicks it. Yep, that's not working. What are you, like a mechanic, Data? What?
And I know this is a first episode syndrome kind of thing, and that's okay. But season one and season two, but specifically season one, definitely feels different than all of the rest of TNG and even all of the rest of the subsequent Star Treks. Like, season one and two of TNG feel way different to me than the rest of TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. Like, it's probably because they've kind of established themselves at that point and they've got a pattern. And
it's because Picard's chair is different. He's got the little flip-up paddles, and those aren't in any other season. It just bugs me every episode. I'm just like, dang, oh, this chair. It's like got the wood mahogany. You know, it's like, really? Yeah.
Do you guys get that impression at all? That, like, especially just this first episode where it's like, this is just a little... it's good or bad or whatever you think, but it's just a little off. Just something is just like a mere universe a little bit or something.
Well, I talked about sort of the cinematography, but like the music also is very high. Hi, there's a soundtrack to this. It's sort of the version of, hey, we might be traveling around a sun in generations. It's hey, we hired people to do music to this. Which again, it's not, I mean, I don't know. People might think it's bad. I don't, you know, again, it's, TOS was, music was it in TOS, and so, but I mean, I other than the close-ups and some of the sort of, like, act your heart out for this part, you know, we kind of, like, didn't, I think there was probably a little bit of overacting in this pilot, where they kind of tempered it down a little bit, as the episodes go.
And it was people like
these! Yes.
But you're right, Philip, it's like, if you hear later TNG music, it's not as noticeable. Well, except for that piece. But I mean, there are pieces, and I guess if you play a piece of music that's more background from like season 5 or 7 or 4, it's harder to place it. But if you hear a piece from season 1, it's like, oh, that's season 1 because it just had a unique sound. Not, you know, not good or bad, but just it you could tell, oh, this is season 1. You know, just like Data's makeup, you could tell.
Yeah, like when Q is exiting as the judge, you hear like the sad trombone. Wah, 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 wah. So, yeah.
He's been trying to hit that solo this whole time. He's never made it.
But I'm going to throw this out here because just it's random. But I mean, one thing that's, I mean, people may think it's not cool. But again, it's callback in All Good Things. We get to see post-World War III Earth. Or is it World War III? Like, I forget, you know, we kind of see like, because again, this is 1987. This is the first Next Generation. It's like we have this great future, but hey, you in 1987, things are going to get probably really crappy in the next 20 years. Just FYI, you know. But we'll get beyond it. You'll get addicted to drugs.
Well, that was one really interesting thing about it. And the other thing was, I was thinking, and I'm not sure this is true, but I think it is, that these courts are essentially taking place around the same era that First Contact, which we just did recently as well, kind of takes place as well, right? Like, they said the mid-21st century, isn't that what they said?
He said a specific date. Didn't he say, like, 79?
Well, no. It changed.
Oh, it changed.
It was like, because Data was like, oh, you know, according to the new, he specifically said the new United Nations charter of, like, 21 or was it 20? No, I think it was like 2039 or something.
Probably
like
now.
And yeah, I can't remember the date, but it was like the 2030s or something like that. And I could be getting this way wrong, so please forgive me if I'm wrong. And then Q was like, oh, by the way, by the 2050s or 2060s or 2070s or whatever it was, they had abolished the new United
Which
Nations
was in,
crap.
New, this is what New York.
Exactly. And so I was thinking that I was pretty sure that this was like mid 21st century. So I was thinking this is kind of close to First Contact-ish.
No governments.
You know,
no
this
resistance.
Is both. Yeah, this is exactly. It would make sense, like, if, you know, in the middle of Montana, you could build a, a rocket. That makes sense. But maybe if you go to Los Angeles or New York, you have to deal with these kind of crazy civil systems, these crazy court systems. If there's no LA anymore.
Sorry, global warming.
Or New York, probably, right? Who knows?
Why do you think Starfleet's in San Francisco, not LA?
All right.
They just have fires, not earthquakes, apparently.
All right, guys. All right, let's do one more topic real quick. Regardless of what you think, if it's good or bad, it's not perfect. So let's make Encounter at Farpoint better. Darren, how do you fix Encounter at Farpoint? Fix it right now. Right now,
I need 100% more docking latch sequences. I think that really was just underplayed. I mean, the nervous look on their faces when they were docking, they were all about to, like, you know, mess their pants, apparently, because they were really scared by this trivial docking that never, ever has any issues in the remaining 7 years that this ship flies around. So, but no, I would say, in honesty, you know, gosh, things to change.
More scants or less scants?
Definitely less scants, but, you know, I know it's a large cast and there's a lot to do, but maybe just use Data, or not Data, but use Geordi and Worf a little more. Like we were saying, obviously they were more on the minor character list. But I mean, Dr. Crusher doesn't really do any doctoring. No one's really sick at all in this. She doesn't act as a doctor, but Daniel's going to correct me right now. So.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I literally audibly gasped there for a second. My point was that I had written down, Picard calls Crusher the CMO.
Yeah.
As in, I'm assuming Chief Medical Officer. Is this the only time in Trek that this happens? I just recognize that.
I think Pulaski calls herself the CMO a couple of times because that's how she rolls.
Oh, I see. Okay. When I called you CMO, you called me Captain. And when I called you Beverly, you called me. Oh, wait. Sorry. That's the next episode. Never mind.
But so that's what I would just say is just add a little more to the minor. And I know it's hard because you're trying to cram so much in. Although if you really want to take, you know, shortcut and just make the episode 1,000 times better, just give Riker the beard right off the bat and boom, he's just that much more awesome. Then everyone's checking out him as he's walking down the corridor.
Agreed. I would. For sure. Especially since he is so slim in this episode.
I never checked him out without a
beard.
He's
very trim.
That's a lie, as we've proven.
It is a lie. What about you, Philip? What would you change?
I mean, it's hard because I think at least for me, because I like it. I guess for people who don't, I'm trying to think of what they would say. Because really just the look. And by look, I mean just like the lighting. I'm repeating myself. But the way the camera, like if it looked like third season, just lighting wise, like maybe that would probably improve it by like 10-20%. Because I think it's sort of the harshness of like, whoa, that's not the way it looks like in the rest of the 6 years we did this. But I don't have a problem with the story. I mean, I get that there's long sequences, but I don't dislike long sequences. I like to live in the world as long as possible. So I mean, it is, you know, the use of the music during the saucer separation obviously is a little. But still, you know, just be silent. I don't know, you know. But I mean, I really can't think of, other than just maybe if they didn't overact as much, you know, just to settle it down a little bit. You know, not as much yelling and but again, that's TOS was, and this isn't a criticism at all of TOS, but a lot of that was overacting because again, how else do you do Trek? So I mean, I really just don't, you know, maybe if they had added, a sexy time planet person, that probably would have made it better. You know, add a little bit of justice. That's always what I think makes season one better. But beyond that, I really can't think of anything except, you know, maybe get Data's makeup right. That's about it.
Although, if you think about it, this is kind of unique in the fact that we don't really see any aliens in this. I mean, as far as like a little bit of modeling clay on the forehead or nose, like the bandy
the
just
space,
has bad hair.
Octopus aren't that alien for you?
They're a little too alien.
Jellyfish,
but it's like you don't really encounter. But he looks totally human.
No, we have an encounter.
It's at Farpoint.
No.
There's a Klingon in the back.
Sorry.
Are you looking around, Darren? Stop
reclining.
Okay,
sorry. I'm
sorry. I'm sorry. Klingon, obviously.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But does this not bother anyone else? To the like, the original series had an excuse, but any time past the 1980s, if you're going to say an alien, I don't care if you stick a gumdrop to their forehead and say that's their defining biological feature. You do not tell me that this exactly looking human being is not a human being. So when they say all of these bandy people and they what they do is they drape
burlap cloth.
You know, cloth,
yeah, that gray 80s, hair's not growth, so.
You know, windows dressing over their head. That's not an alien. Yeah. That does not make an alien. It drives me insane. And this is the first time that it happens in TNG, obviously, because, you know, it's the first episode. But it doesn't
have no excuse.
That Beta Zed looks totally human. Very frequently. I can't figure out what makes her a Beta Zed.
Well, at least there's something. They, you know, Suter in Voyager, creepy because he has those. He's creepy.
Well,
he's
Troy
got
does have
eyes.
An accent, so you know
contacts.
She's Beta Zed.
That's true. That's true. Which she gets from her
father.
Father.
Which
mother?
Is human, so never mind.
I don't know. Yeah. There's a distinct lack of aliens. I mean, in a couple episodes, we'll get, like, you know, the Antikins and the, you know, I mean, those aliens, like, that's where they were hiding them all. Like, these deep people don't look anything like humans.
And those people on the Justice planet looked really alien, too. I mean,
well, no human would wear that clothing willingly. That's how you know.
And as far as I'm concerned, like, the one thing that I would say is I kind of agree with you guys now. The more we're thinking about it, the more we're talking about it, like, it's not terrible. The thing is that it's not structured properly, I don't think.
The problem was it was entirely
a lot of...
far too simple.
Too simple a puzzle for humanity to
and they're
understand.
Just... There's not enough to fill it, is what I'm saying. Like, it's very, like, if you watch it and you just, like, there are too many awkward looks and camera gazes and reaction shots, and you could fill this with other stuff. Like, there could be more.
You could probably cut a third out of it pacing-wise, yeah. And it would be
exactly.
Much trimmer.
Exactly.
It could be, like, an hour and a half, but no one's going to do the heat. Either has to be an hour or two
yes,
hours, and so
exactly.
It's kind of hard to.
So it's not necessarily the story that's the problem. It's obviously just the pacing and the structure that's the issue. And I think that we could definitely clean that up and fix it and make it a little bit better. I actually still think it's probably the weakest of the opening series. But you know what? We're going to end up talking about this again without a shadow of a doubt. And believe it or not, Encounter at Farpoint is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at some other things we've been talking about all around the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Marathons for new viewers.
If someone were to say to my 13-year-old self, here is every single episode of Star Trek ever made, I just don't know what I would do. I honestly think I probably wouldn't appreciate the shows as much as I do because they'd be so disposable.
Earl Grey.
Cliff Bowl and Hollow Pursuits.
Did he override anything, or did he actually just walk right in?
No, he just hit the button.
He just went boopity-boop-boop.
The Ready Room.
The Apple with Mark Cushman.
But he's standing outside this building talking to Val. And there was this one point in the script where the writer wrote, Val reacts to what Kirk said, and Bob Justman in his memo said, I'm sitting here trying to imagine how a building is going to react to what our Captain Kirk says.
The Orb.
Runabouts.
It definitely feels more like the Old West. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're basically in a covered wagon instead of, like, a train.
But so. A covered wagon that can go warp 5.
To the journey!
Cue on Voyager.
You know, you got the chocolates and the roses and, you know, the
I'm
puppies.
I'm not talking
like
about
that.
The puppies.
Someone had to do it.
I'm not talking about the puppy. Warp 5.
Malcolm Reed.
It almost feels like the writers thought it was fun to just keep throwing facts in and dialogue about him. You know, usually in the show Bible, you want to see people do things, and they just say, oh, we'll have this person say this. We'll have a whole episode about how he loves pineapple, but he's allergic to it.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Hewitt Wolf Recap.
So it's been like a while. Three Amigos or Galaxy Quest, but with Anne Rice?
I think it might have been. I could be wrong about that. I don't know.
That sounds, you know, equally amazing and horrible.
Melodic Treks.
Dick Fontaine and DS9's Jazz.
In 1983, Darren was offered the role of Jim Corrigan on ABC series TJ Hooker. The part of Hooker, as many of you will know, was played by none other than William Shatner or Captain James Tiberius Kirk.
Literary Treks.
The Insolence of Office.
But Starfleet's a military organization, and when you sign up for Starfleet, you're joining that group, and I think that you give up some of your rights in that situation.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, not to be confused with Spock's Brain, Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and all of Trek FM. And you can also directly help us keep Earl Grey coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. Well, illustrations anyway. If you go to trekfm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you will see on our website. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which one you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trekfm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show and the network to you each week. All right, guys. So if anybody wants to talk to you about Scants, Darren, how would they get a hold of you?
I don't want to talk about Scants anymore. I'm tired of being the Scant guy. I'm
hashtag Scant Darren.
But no, if they want to talk to me about Scants or anything else in regards to First Contact or Star Trek, they can reach me on Twitter.
Well, First Contact, that was like 2 weeks ago, maybe you should. Yeah.
Q-week.
Well, if anyone wants to talk to me about Scants, I got nothing that's funny about Scants. I hate Scants. If anyone wants to talk to me, they can find me on Twitter under Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Or they can listen to me talk about other science fiction on my other podcast, which is The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, available on iTunes.
Which has incredible theme music, just so everyone knows. So go.
You need a good
that.
Way to start your show. Or your morning, forget coffee. Just listen to my theme show music. If you're not ready to, it's a shot of adrenaline to the heart. Let's just say that.
It really is. I listen to it over and over again. I love every second of it. And Philip, how would people get a hold of you?
If they want to learn how to treat a ship like a lady, all they have to do is go to Twitter Boy and find me at NC Public Servant. That's NC like North Carolina.
So, just out of curiosity, are you now Leonard McCoy or Frank Underwood?
Well, back in Gaffney, the way we'd teach a starship is to head at the full warp and never look back.
All right. That's a thing, apparently. And if you need to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word. All right, guys. Well, frankly, I've got to go down to engineering because, well, as we all know, there's not a chief engineer. And I don't know if you've got to notice in this episode, there's a sub level below the main level in engineering that is used in this episode. And I've got to go check on why nobody has been down there for 7 years. So it's been good talking about Encounter at Farpoint, and I guess I'll see you guys all next week. Engage.
Make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.